Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Hello everybody and welcome along to a special programme on the Radio Show Limited network of channels. I'm John Hindhoff and joining me to look at the 2022 MotoGP season, which is coming along very quickly, is Declan Brennan and Nick Damon. Dex, let's start with you. Welcome back to the airwaves. I'll ask you, without going into any major detail, we're going to go through the different teams, the different manufacturers, the different riders as well for this year. But are you excited about 2022 MotoGP?
Yes, I am very excited. Very. The times and testing would indicate that, and for reasons we'll get into in the next over the next 40 minutes or so, I think it's going to be exceptionally competitive, and we are going to see new winners, I believe, this year. Mm. And I don't think we're going to see anybody dominate, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
It all gets underway fairly shortly at the Qatar Grand Prix. Dex, no real shocks on the schedule. MotoGP did a cracking job through the lockdowns and the pandemic to keep a championship going, even though we didn't know how many rounds they were going to have on at one stage. But we're getting back to something near normality now, in terms of the calendar at least.
Yeah, and what feels like a more traditional structure to that calendar, with the flyaways, some flyaways at the start, building up, coming back from the Americas into Europe and then off to Asia again towards the end, before obviously a traditional early winter, late fall, late autumn finale in Valencia. And so I'm particularly excited about places like Phillip Island coming back on the calendar, because that's always a fantastic race. And so there's things like that to look forward to, and new places like to see how things work out at Mandalika, where they tested a couple of weeks ago,
which was like a dirt track at times.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's
I think we tried to put it in Malaysia on Midweek Motorsport that week. But yes, well, that is a big question to see how that runs. Nick Damon is with us as well. Hello, Nick. What are you most looking forward to this 2022 MotoGP season?
Seeing where Marc Marquez can put himself, given his current level of injury, against not falling off. I think that's the wild card. We can say what we like about, you know, Fabio or Jack or anybody else having a chance of winning, but it's down to really the form of Marquez. If he recaptures his 2019 form, he might as well go home. But is that even possible anymore?
I want to, before we get into the riders, talk about the manufacturers with you two. And for no other reason than their rider won the championship, Yamaha. Let's talk about them. First of all, Fabio Quartararo, congratulations to him. First French champion for donkey's years. He's the pride of the tricolour. Dex, Yamaha, are they in danger of becoming a one-rider manufacturer in the same way as Honda have done with Marquez, with Quartararo on the Yam?
Well, a fully fit Morbidelli when he's completely comfortable on that bike, I think would certainly argue with that point. But initially, yes. And the biggest issue they have is that he will have to be on his game to a level that probably isn't possible with the Yamaha in its current form for him to challenge, because what he won't be able to do, for the most part, it would look like, will be race the Ducatis in a straight fight. I think he can wear them out, and I think he can, if he gets out in front, potentially. But in terms of A, racing them, and B, having the outright time attack speed to qualify far enough up the grid to make that easy for him, I'm not sure that's possible on this Yamaha. So I think the cards are entirely stacked against Yamaha in general, and even Quartararo, I think, is going to struggle. Because don't forget, there are 8 Ducatis in the field now, 4 or 5 of which can probably win races. So they just haven't made enough progress in terms of power. And that power, from in simple terms, not having enough power means they can't run the aero that the others are running, because they are just going to have so much drag that it's going to negate any power gains they've made. So they're in a weird situation right now.
Let's move over to Ducati, because they had the second place rider last season. Ducati, an independent force within the Audi technology group, and very interesting. They have been, Nick, and seemingly continue to be, the kings of aero, and they've got numbers on their side as well for 2022, as Dex has mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's absolutely no doubt that over the past 5 or 6 years, the leaders in the world of innovation with the MotoGP, for good and bad, have been Ducati and Gigi Dallier, of course. Mm. They've also been the leaders in absolute useless at managing people. So it's kind of evened itself out. Great bike, terrible man management. Perhaps that's now looking a little bit less like with a couple of Frankie Bagnaia and people like that, looking like they may be able to get past the fact that they don't know how to look after people. They've got a great bike. They've got, again, another set of innovations back out for this season. Yeah, they've got the ride height lowering device at the front. The deck says you've got more aero, and you've got that really important the bludgeon of numbers. They've got 8 bikes, 4 of them. I think 4 are pure work, but might be more than 4 are this year's bike. And then they got four people backing them up, and even people on the old bikes, right, on a bike that's a year old, and that was blooming quick in the first place. So they have got this ability to bludgeon on a Ducati track. People might be scrapping around trying to get 5th or 6th outside it. So it is a
top 10,
a double edged sword.
If you think exactly that, Nick, on a Ducati track, where those bikes can be incredibly difficult to pass and race with, if you are a Maverick Vinales on an Aprilia, or if you're, more importantly, if you're Fabio Quartararo, and you qualify 7th or 6th, and they all get off the line faster than you, then you realise that, in the past, maybe he's had to wear out 3 or 2 or 1 Ducati to establish any sort of dominance. Now he's got to do that fivefold. It's potentially
could be 6 bikes. It could be 6 bikes. It really could be. I agree with you there. We'll revisit that when we go through some of the riders. Let's move on to the third manufacturer I want to talk about. That's Suzuki, with a new team manager. What a roller coaster ride they've had over the last couple of seasons. Champions, of course. Then a bit of a reshuffle and a weird year last year, although Joan May, of course, still finished 3rd in the championship. Will the new guy make a difference, Declan?
Interestingly, they feel very confident. They completed, for example, they basically packed up early at the Mandalika test, because they completed, despite the fact that they had COVID case within their engineering and losing Joan Mir to food poisoning, they completed everything they wanted to complete in testing, and are weirdly quietly confident going into Qatar. Now I don't believe for a minute they feel like they're going to win in Qatar, because the idea of anybody other than probably a factory Ducati winning in Qatar is pretty unlikely, but they seem extremely confident they have a bike. They're in this situation that I scratch my head based on how MotoGP now works, how they continue to be a 2-bike team. It just seems counterintuitive to being successful, to rely on incremental improvement two riders for data.
And Nick, how much different is Livio Supo going to make? He's been around for nearly 30 years. Started with the 125s and 250s for Benetton Honda, if you remember that far. back, but he's been to HRC as a team principal. He got five titles there. He's got an e-bike company, and he's back in the paddock. He was at Ducati when Casey Stoner was champion. Last year, Suzuki leadership was literally run by committee. Surely, yeah, having a single person has to be a step up from that transitional year for Suzuki.
Yeah, I mean, I think after Brivio left, whom they didn't replace.
Davide Brivio, yeah.
I think you get someone, you get effectively a team principal, an experienced man who knows what he's doing and can hit the ground running and take away that high level of distraction of the politics and the frontline media presentations and saying platitudes. It's a huge distraction to an engineering side of the team, which who was doing it. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Livio's super fantastic, but it could have been, anyone who's got experience of running a frontline MotoGP or World Superbike team. Yeah. He just needed someone to take away that level of the job area, to be honest. But I'm completely with Declan. I think that the problem, I don't understand why they're a two-bike team. It's such a disadvantage. And you think about the performance during the season, and it was you kind of think, well, they're there or thereabouts, but no real highs, no real lows. And you kind of think, well, if you had two other bikes developing and looking at setups and perhaps having a chance to go a completely different way in one of to the extremes and give them a chance to look outside the envelope rather than the course with the two riders that have had to focus so hard because of the way qualifying works, pre-qualifying effectively works within MotoGP. You've got to be fast in the sessions to get into that top 10 shootout effectively without having to bump through. You think you're just missing out on so many options of trying things if it's not quite working,
And it's still, for me, the Suzuki's still the prettiest bike. It's the one. I know you won't, but I'm an ex-Suzuki rider as well. So, but I think it looks. You look at it and you look, and it says Suzuki. The line says Suzuki without it having it emblazoned on the side. It's clearly a good chassis because it stops and turns very, very well indeed. But they're just missing that last couple of percent. Let's move on to KTM. Dex, KTM, not exactly a breakout season for them, but they had a ride of sixth.
It was more of a break back in season, actually.
It was more a break back in season. Yes, very good. Red Bull KTM factory, their big team. They had a ride of sixth in the championship last year. What have they been looking like in testing, and where do you think they are in the hierarchy of manufacturers?
Well, I'll answer the second part first. To sort of expand on that analogy, they kicked the door in MotoGP and then apologised, repaired the door and left. So, last year was so bizarre. They had massive tyre problems. They literally, Michelin built a tyre. It was almost like they went to KTM and said, can you tell us exactly the types of characteristics in a tyre that won't work for your bike? And they told them, and then that's what Michelin built. So they struggled massively. And then things began to click, and we had Oliveira showing how good he really is with the win and the 2 seconds in three races. And then performance dropped off again. He had a big incident in practice, which probably hurt him way more than they let on. And then they had the Binder weird crazy win in the rain / drying track, and that was in Austria. And in the end, it's hard to know what's going on there. They were kind of all over the place. They were slower than the Suzuki in testing, which would be a worry considering their V4 has a lot of power. They started to play around with some really interesting front end aero and perhaps went too far. It looks like they're going to dial it back for Qatar. They don't, again, just in terms of rules, in case you don't know, you only have to choose. You get basically two opportunities to adjust your aero in a season, and you literally can wait till just before first practice, effectively in Qatar, to
declare your first body kit, effectively.
Yes, effectively, yes. Mm-hmm. So they obviously pinched Francesco Guidotti from Pramac. Which is interesting because obviously it's a similar situation to Suzuki in terms of got new broad at the top management. He was quietly confident that coming out of testing that they made the changes they need. So we're just going to have to wait and see. It may boil down to the fact that people just didn't show their hands in testing, but I just don't believe that to be the case. I think they still have a lot of work to do. They're a big team now. They're winners. They're at the top table in every sense. And now they have to show that they can continue to do it. Other people, Honda, have caught up in terms of power, if not passed them. They have work to do.
Amazingly enough, Nick, and we'll talk about Honda now. Last season, their best rider in the Riders' Championship was still Marc Márquez, courtesy of him coming back and having a couple of three very good races. Honda have not had a good few years, and that Marc Márquez effect that given them so many victories and so much success had really worked against them, because that was a one-man bike. Is it still for 2022? Are they daring to do that?
It's what they, you know, they absolutely discover the hardest and most painful way possible. If you design your bike around someone with alien skills, when you put mere mortals on it, it doesn't work very well. Hmm. And so their alien had you know, disappeared off in his spaceship, you know, crash. And they've had, you know, a year and a half where, you know, they didn't win a race. I think they only got the podium in the wet, didn't they? Or they may have got one podium in the dry, but mostly in the wet. And, you know, and he was injured. When he came back, suddenly, you know, he managed to win a couple of races, Circuit Americas. And obviously he won at Sachsenring because he has to. It's actually in the program.
Well, he's contractually obliged to win at Circuit of the Americas as well.
Yeah, it's true, actually, yeah. But in fairness, the Sachsenring one, he absolutely won. And it was pretty obvious in Circuit of the Americas that certainly at least Quartararo wasn't even trying. He was just going for the points. But the point about it is that they have absolutely changed that. They've changed the ethos during this year when it was still, don't forget, when they were designing this year's car, they weren't 100% sure Marc was going to come back. God, tell them did that take?
Yeah,
damn.
But you haven't said drivers yet. You haven't said drivers yet.
Yeah, when we drive this year's bike, they designed that whilst they still weren't quite sure about how they would come back and in what strength. So they've gone a completely different way. So much so that Paul Espargaro was able to top the timing sheets on a number of occasions during the testing. So, you know, it now comes down to have they designed yes. out the special advantages that Marquez could get out of their bike, and have they, while speeding up the rest of the team, slowed down Marquez, or can Marquez adapt and just be just as quick at a bike that's not completely designed to his whim?
Well, I'd be worried. If I'm the rest of the paddock, I'd be worried, because they have a big increase in horsepower. And they've come out with really significantly more front wing. And the bike...
Which is odd when you're talking about a motorcycle.
I know.
Much more front wing.
And the bike seems to be at least as fast, if not faster than it was. Which means that if the bike is still as fast at the top end, and with more... and they've increased the aero at the front... That means they're going to be much faster at corner exit. And the bike also, to Paul Espargaro's delight, is significantly better at the rear. It has way more rear grip. Because, funnily enough, back to Nick's point, they've designed a bike that other people should be able to ride. And lo and behold, who, leaving Mandalika, who is fastest? Paul Espargaro. And by the way, to Nick's point again, the big kind of takeaway for me from Mandalika was Marc Márquez didn't try any time attack. He didn't try to go as fast as he could have because he physically couldn't. His shoulder, after a lot of testing, his shoulder was sore. There was soreness in his shoulder. So that's going to, it's almost like that's performance balancing. Like, worryingly, I wouldn't like there to be a situation where a group of people of technicians go in after a race and hit riders with a mallet to make them slower. Yeah, but that is, we may have a situation where Marc Márquez is very fast, but injuries have caught up with him and have made him mortal.
Final manufacturer, Prilla, Aprilia. How do we think they will go? Dex, you have first go on this one.
I'm weirdly excited about, based on testing and based on the idea that every time I've seen anything of Maverick Vinales in the past few weeks. He's been extremely happy, which is quite worrying for everybody else, because a happy, confident Maverick would be very fast on anything. And between him and Aleix, they've shown a lot of speed. Again, they've made significant changes to aero, and they've made significant changes to engine electronics, and I think they're going to be really competitive. And Nick always made the point that what they lacked was a true number one, and they have one now. Irrespective of if you remove any of the issues he has inside him, his own brain, I think he is a true number one, and now they have one. So I'd be fascinated to hear what Nick thinks, but I think that they could win races this year.
Win races, Aprilia. Is it possible, Nick?
I suppose if Maverick has one of those days where, you know, the sun's shining, he gets up, someone makes his breakfast absolutely correctly, he's on the front and the green doesn't have to overtake anybody. Yes.
Right.
Maverick to me is the definition of damaged goods.
Right.
I would not pay him because I wouldn't trust him if I was running a team.
Oh, really?
It's almost like you go back to those pay for points, which you know, sort of world champion, you come back. We won't go pay you anything, but you actually produce a result. We give you some money for that.
Yeah.
Aleix Espargaró was an excellent journeyman rider. He was he's not a winner. That's evidenced by the fact he's never won. And his best result in MotoGP is a third.
Yeah.
So you know he was there or thereabouts. He was, you know, in the third, fourth, fifth battle. So many times. I mean, so many different combinations. So he managed to not win on Yamaha days, on KTM days, on Honda days, and on
Suzuki.
Every other team would win, and he'd manage not to win, but still be very close. So obviously that bike's very, very not average is the wrong word, but has a very placid base, so it doesn't peak and trough.
Yes.
So if you did have a true mentally stable top line driver, then I absolutely agree with
Dex.
You definitely think there'd be some wins. But Maverick is such a Maverick, isn't it? It's perfectly named. You know, the point about this is, when he joined Yamaha, he hit the ground and won the first two races of the season, then just disappeared from sight. There's no reason to expect, apart from the Qatar's Ducati circuit, that he couldn't have a little purple patch in the season, win a couple of races, and disappear again, and either side do nothing.
Well, you've started. You know, we've started talking about riders here. You didn't got me to do it there. Riders here. And that is Aprilia Racing, Maverick Vinales and Aleix Espargaró. I'll do them in alphabetical order because that's how they're listed on the MotoGP site. A word about those two decks. Damaged goods for Maverick, says Nick, and Aleix Espargaró is not a winner, evidenced by the fact that he's not won. A sentence at least about those two.
Well, that's a classic. We can add that to... cost capping caps costs. I have no doubt that Maverick will win this year. I have no doubt that it'll happen, and he'll win a race at least. At least one more, and he'll probably win in Maverick / classic style, where he takes the lead from pole and does every lap within 4/10. What was that?
Is he going to take the lead from Paul Espargaró? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. And he'll win. And here's the thing is, the wild card in all of this with both of those riders is actually the team. Because don't forget, they've moved. They're no longer run by Gresini. Gresini is running a separate a Ducati outfit. So that's the question mark. That might be a good thing or a bad thing. I do not know right now, but I just know that I'm absolutely with Nick in so far as that Aleix is Aleix. I don't think he's going to win a race. I think he could be, weirdly.
He's a good second rider, though, Dex, isn't he?
Really,
because of what Nick was saying, he keeps racking up the points. And
that
he
could
keeps
be really good
there.
This year. That could be the MO. That could be the Joan Mir MO of 2020.
Yes,
could work
true.
In his favour. He could, if his median performance level is high enough, he could be thereabouts in the championship well after the second half of the year. I think that's absolutely possible. And I think
particularly if everybody else
Maverick. weirdly.
Yeah. I think particularly if everybody else is knocking lumps out of each other. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's move on to Ducati. The first Ducati team we're going to talk about is the Ducati Lenovo team. This is Jack Miller and Frankie Bagnaia. Jack Miller and Frankie Bagnaia, how are they going to do? Declan, you have first go on this one.
I have thought for many years, and I'm increasingly of the belief that, and this is, I'm going to be very harsh because this is not quite what I mean, but it's the easy. I think Jack Miller's a fraud. I think Jack Miller is very, very fast, and he talks and he does dumb things because he thinks he's great, like sideswiping Van Meer in Qatar last year. He's not good enough. I think it's.
I tell you when he is good, Dex. I tell you when he is good. He is absolutely the industry standard for going out on slicks as it's drying. You know, he's the first one to do it. He makes it work, and everybody else goes, I tell you what, let's give it three laps, and then we'll give it a go. But we're not going to do it right now because that's Jack. No.
But here's the thing. He suddenly has found himself within the last couple of weeks with the announcement of the Pecco Bagnaia contract extension. He is suddenly in the position that Petrucci was, where there's a giant novelty magnifying glass / microscope following him around. And he is absolutely on a critical point, or at a critical point in his career. And I don't think he's good enough. And I think Bagnaia is better. And I think with eight Ducatis, a Ducati suddenly have six other riders literally in their orbit who they can, or sorry, five other riders. Six who they can look at and say, well, he's better than Jack, or he'd be a better replacement. And I think he has so much pressure on him, and I think he'll buckle under it, and I think he will be comfortably beaten by Pecco Bagnaia this year.
Quick word from you, Nick, on Jack Miller, overhyped?
Well, I wouldn't have gone for fraud. I'd have gone to flatters to deceive. Right. I think really, as a, you know, because it just gets a little bit fair. But I'm with.
I have the diplomatic service on the line for you. Apparently, they don't need Dex, is what they've just said.
But I am completely in agreement with Dex. He's just not good enough. Right. He's
and Frankie,
had enough chances.
Pecco?
I think that Bagnaia is the non-Marquez favourite.
Hmm. Really?
Absolutely. Okay.
On that bike,
the way he won the race in the season, he made the important mistake. He fell off while leading, which is a massive learning situation.
Yeah.
He looked good. He looked confident. And yeah, I mean, I think he is the favourite if you factor out what an alien can do.
Right. Let's take Grassini next. As Dex mentioned, it's a change of manufacturer with them, and they've got an Bastianini and Fabio Di Gianantonio. Their truck has to be extra long just to get their names on. we'll give Nick the first go on this one. Change of manufacturers, but Grassini staying in the paddock. That's great. Particularly tough couple of seasons for them in professional and personal terms.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Bouncing back, they have picked up the Ducati bikes. I mean, I'm going to have to rely on Dex. I don't know. I think Bastianini is getting a this year's bike, isn't he? He's getting a 22, isn't he? But Fabio Giannantonio, I think, he's getting a 21.
Deserves one based on his performances towards the end of last year started to look absolutely ridiculous. He looked phenomenal on a Sponsorama bike, and he had podiums, and he had the thing where he couldn't qualify. They couldn't get real speed, one lap speed, but he knew how to manage and would come on very late, to the point where people would say, if he could qualify, he'd have been a threat, maybe even to win races at the end of last year. So I think he's going to be very good and be at the sharp end more often than not. I think Giannantonio has a lot to learn. It's funny, he might be one of these guys, and you do see it. And to be honest, Quartararo was kind of one of these guys that
just does better on the big bike.
Yes, benefits by moving to a bigger bike. Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think his riding style will suit the MotoGP better than it did in Moto2. I really do. Let's jump across because we're going to have to rattle through some of these. There are 12 teams. This is the fourth of them if we're going in alphabetical order, I reckon. LCR Honda, the Idemitsu bike, very pretty machine. Taki Nakagami and Alex Marquez. Nakagami, the unluckiest man in MotoGP. Is it going to be his year finally this year on that LCR? Dex?
It's hard to say, but I do believe, from what we've already said, that both he and Alex Marquez are going to be very happy with the bike that they're being provided. And don't forget that this is LCR has got 2022 bikes now. And which means LCR have bikes that aren't a year old and weren't designed for an alien. So Taka Nakagami has done a massive amount of the donkey work in terms of development. And so one would suspect that both he and Alex Marquez are going to be pretty confident that they will be racier, to use that. Actually, an expression I really like. They'll be racier this year, because what we did see last year was them kind of go a little bit backwards. Because if you remember the year before, Nakagami was moving towards the front of the grid. And then at, oh my God, was it, help me out, Nick, where did it, was it?
It was Spain somewhere.
Yeah,
it was still not that much.
It's half of the season you've covered there in one.
Was it the
one
with the
flag?
Big wall? It was. It was. It was Aragon.
Aragon, the one with the big wall. Yes, very good.
Qualified on pole. He dominated every session and then dropped it on the first lap. Like, and so he has never, almost never recovered from that. We could see with the general uptick in performance of the Hondas, I think, on the certainly on the tracks with where the horsepower comes into its own, I could see both of them doing well and certainly bouncing back from the struggles that they both had last year.
Yeah, he did that at another race as well where he fell off on the first corner. I think it was Rimini, but I can't remember. It was a bit slippery there. Let's crack on to the champion riders team, Monster Energy Yamaha MotoGP, Fabio Quartararo and Franco Morbidelli. Nick, Fabio, it's going to be tough. We've said it already. It's going to be tough for him to defend his championship this year. That wasn't a dominant performance last year, but he held it all together, which he hadn't done in the previous season. How are he and Franco going to get on that Yamaha this year?
Yeah, I think what Fabio did last year was put together a world championship run in a full Niki Lauda style, getting the points you need, taking when you can get, taking the wins you can get them, otherwise getting the best result you can, not falling off. Much to be admired there. Obviously, Frankie Mordo was injured for a weird knee injury for a vast amount of the season. Realistically, let's pretend it was a spec series, and you know you had those two riders on your bike, you would feel pretty confident of having them both in the top five overall. To be honest, obviously Frankie was second in 2020. He's fully fit. He's fantastically competitive. So there's no kind of question mark over the riders, I don't think. Even and I think a good relationship. They've obviously been together a couple of years previously in the Petronas team. But the thing I would say is, you know, it's all questions about the bike, and we've had testing, and testing is just testing. But it does seem to be not working that much. But again, also there's a kind of an undercurrent, of course, of Fabio's negotiations for his contract. So by talking down the bike and talking up himself, he makes himself more valuable, both to Yamaha and to people who may be swooping around to try and sign him up. So, you know, as always, it's not quite as bad as MotoGP, but do please follow the money.
Always,
you know, it is kind of down, as Dex says, you know, it's down to the bike. What can the bike do? We know its strengths, but it does appear that they've not improve the weakness as much as they should have done, but it only appears that, and we won't actually know until the first couple of races are in the books.
Dex, Fabio stays on after winning the championship. He could have moved on. He would have moved on as champion, but presumably there's a couple of things at play here. One, he wants to win against a full season opposition from Marquez, and two, obviously he's following the Monster money, and that's why he's still there.
Yeah, I don't doubt that he wants to beat Marquez in a straight fight. I don't doubt that at all. And I don't doubt that he wants to maintain or increase his value on the open market by winning another title. And I think that will be his concern, is that to some extent, is that the factory Yamaha team just don't seem to have given him the tools necessarily to do that. And to Nick's point, I think they've also now given him a teammate who can beat him. A fully fit Morbidelli showed at the end of 2020 how much he'd matured and how good he was. And it'd be interesting to see how he works with Patrick Primmer, his new crew chief, who basically was like a senior Olin's engineer prior. And that, to me, could be a key ingredient. I don't sleep on Franco Morbidelli. I think he improved.
He's another
and
one like Bagnaia.
I
think he's a bit like Bagnaia. He just keeps picking up. He keeps picking up points, and I think he'll pick up good points this year. He's good.
Yeah, but he's not. That's what I was going to say. But also his career and his ability has continued to move on an upward curve, just slower and at a different rate to other riders. But it's definitely there. I wouldn't sleep on a fully fit Franco on a 2022 bike. Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Three MotoGP victories on his CV. Next up, the VR46, the Mooney VR46 racing team for Marco Bezzecchi and Luca Marini. Nick, do you want to have a first go on these?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously supposed to be the Aramco team, but they managed in some way fall out with the Saudi Arabians, and the Mooney came from somewhere else in the end.
Tish.
Oh, dear.
I see
Luca Marini, half-brother of Valentino Rossi, was, again, another rider who was showing a little bit more promise towards the back end of the season, and mixing it up. Marco
Bezzecchi.
You just give it to me for difficult names. Bezzecchi is one of the many Moto2 promoted riders. Was it one with a huge amount of buzz about him? It's obviously. I'm pretty sure they haven't got 22 bikes, and they've got.
Marini does.
Got what bike?
Marini does.
Has he got 22? Oh, blimey, that's good negotiation by his brother. But yeah, I mean, even the 21 bike isn't that tight. But this is the issue. You look at that and you think, right, they are not going to be going for the championship. But there's nothing to say that they can't do really irritating things to the works bikes. For example, both of them qualify straight through to qualifying one, to qualifying two, you know, and make other to pre-qualify. You know, have a decent race. Block other people with the power of the race. You know, even though they're running fifth and sixth, perhaps, or sixth and ninth, but they'll be in there. And, you know, scoring more Ducati points and putting more people down who would normally want to be up there because they're the leading team of that particular manufacturer. It's quite, you know, this red wall, even though they'd be painted different colours, is a pretty impressive idea that Ducati come with. And you kind of find it hard to see any way, again, outside aliens, how it's not going to work in next year's show.
It's just Marco a shame Bezzecchi, that they didn't...
Dex.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Dex. Go on.
It's just a shame that they didn't have 10 riders, because then they could have four with three on top, two on top, and one, so they could have a triangle.
Yes, excellent.
Rides in formation.
Tighten that up, chaps.
Do you mean like the white helmets?
Yes, the old white helmets. That's something. That's a very parochial thing to say. Bezzecchi's got, you know, three Moto 2 wins, three Moto 3 wins under his belt. He had, in 2020, he had podium finishes and a couple of victories, Styria and Valencia. But then at the end, I mean, he was in with a shout in 2020 for the championship.
Yeah,
and then fell
and
off
2021
twice.
He dropped off a little bit in 2021 and then kind of felt like it picked up a bit of form towards the end of the year and started to find some speed.
If he's not an absolute favourite, he's certainly a front runner for the championship on that bike.
Who are we talking about now? Have you moved on to Jorge Martin, by the way?
No. Bezzecchi. People think he's going to do something special this year.
No, that's the talk of mad people. He's number two to Marini. I think Marini will be, I have no doubt Bezzecchi will turn a few heads and grab some really good results this year. Because that whole group, I think the group who've moved up over the last, in stages over the last 2 to 3 years from Moto2 are pretty exceptional. To the point where I would argue that Moto2 is now lacking in a bit of talent, to be perfectly honest. I think we've arguably drained Moto2 of all of the best talent other than Pedro Acosta, who I think might even weirdly win the title. That's a separate discussion, and move up to MotoGP next year at the age of 12. But Bezzecchi will, without question, shine at times.
He's been very quick in the pre-season. Yes, he's just got quicker and quicker. Yes.
And VR46 is literally the bizarro Ducati, insofar as it's the management is so good and so familial, and he'll be supported, and he's been part of that for so long. I think he will be given the opportunity to breathe and learn, and they'll be fine.
Six down, six to go. Let's move on to Pramac Racing. Juan Zarco and Jorge Martin. Declan, that looks a pretty well-balanced team to me, and we know what Pramac can do. Supposedly not a works bike, but my goodness me, they punch as if they are.
Well, this year, to quote Nick, Spain's sixth best rider might win the world championship.
Yeah,
because he's very, very good, and he's very confident, and that's Jorge Martin, obviously, and he's now a winner on that bike, and he is, without question, number one on that team. As much as I am a Zarco devotee / fan, but Jorge Martin is a fully fit, fully healed Jorge Martin is going to be a threat for the title, I firmly believe, and he's very happy, and he's coming out of testing in a very, very good mood, and he's on a 2022 very, very heavily supported factory, effectively almost a factory bike. And we know, we already discussed how good those bikes are. So I'd be interested to see as Nick revises his opinion of Spain's sixth best rider.
Sixth best rider, chance for the championship, and Juan Zarco still doing what he does. Pramac looks strong, Nick.
Juan Zarco, I've just had a look at Juan Zarco basically is like, Aleix Espargaró with like an extra 10%. You know, he's never won a race, but he's got, he's got much, much closer. So he is your points turning machine, but not a man who's going to win a championship. Whereas Jorge, as Dex said, he can avoid falling off and breaking parts of himself. Yeah. And has moved up to being in the top three Spanish riders, probably. Could do pretty well. I think it's absolutely a Martin Bagnaia championship for normal people at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, and Juan Zarco still looking for his MotoGP maiden victory, the Frenchman, 15 times a winner in Moto2, and of course two world championships in Moto2 as well, was the pride of France until Quartararo came around. Let's move on to Red Bull KTM Factory Racing. This is Brad Binder and Miguel Oliveira, the Portuguese rider in with KTM. And you go first this time. BB, Brad Binder and Miguel Oliveira. What do you reckon?
It's a really weird situation with KTM. They outed Danilo Petrucci and the other guy who got rid of is now running for Honda, isn't he? Thank you, right, Iker Lekkonen.
Yeah.
And it was kind of I felt that when they got rid of the riders they were going to get rid of, and decided who was going to stay in the factory team, it was mostly done with a pin. You know, they put all the four names in a hat and just pulled out the first two, because, you know, we've seen flashes of brilliance from Binder and from Oliveira, but we've seen nothing, you know, which would make you think that they're good enough to lead a factory team. I think they're both. Now, whether that's them or the vagaries of the KTM bike, you know, don't forget, you know, the bike was dreadful at the start of the season, and they had this miracle new chassis. It was brilliant for the middle third of the season, and it was dreadful at the end again. So you're going, well, what's going on there? And is it a lack of leadership? Is it inability to lead the team? Are Brad Binder and Miguel Oliveira pushing in different directions from the other two riders at the time? Their B team now which we haven't got yet, but they both had rookies on. So how much are they going to be contributing to the development of the bike? It's, you know, it's a weird situation. They almost need a massive star figurehead, obviously not one who's got mental issues like Maverick, to kind of push this bike in a direction. But, you know, whilst, you know, we had this conversation like a year, at the beginning of last year, you go, yeah, Red Bull, absolutely, yeah, they've got KTM, yeah. Now you're kind of going, no, I don't think so. I think they peaked too soon, and now they're back on the slide.
And that, in some ways, you could also say that, Dex, about Brad Binder. When he came up in 2020 and won at the Czech Grand Prix, and that was the first rookie to take a victory in his rookie season since Mark Marquez. He didn't do very much for the rest of the season, but he got the Rookie of the Year. Last year, brilliant ride in the rain, as it started to rain in Austria. But that was his only podium of the season. He ends up sixth in the standings at the end of last year because he was there or thereabouts. But I kind of feel as though he's got to do a bit more. We're expecting him maybe to do a bit more, and I don't know if Miguel Oliveira will be able to help him in that respect.
Well, I'll get to Oliveira in a minute because I am unashamedly an Oliveira fan. But Binder is incredibly quick, and what is absolutely must frustrate the team more than anything is, and back to the point we've broadly made about this season and what's going to happen. If you're not fast enough in time attack or over a lap, this season particularly, with the way grids are probably going to line up with Hondas and Ducatis up the front, you cannot afford to start races from the third or fourth row, probably, of the grid. You simply can't. You can't do what you know, Suzuki riders of Amir, for example, as did almost to win a world championship, was do that, but you know, manage his way through races to the front. Binder seems to be well capable of riding very fast under race conditions, but he seems to be incapable of riding fast over a lap. And that's more him than the bike. And that continues to be a problem. If that's a problem this year, they have no chance of scoring points, you know, to any great degree with Brad Binder. And Oliveira proved to me this year, I beg your pardon, in 2021, that he has the talent. What he certainly didn't have
was in Barcelona last year.
Yeah.
What in Barcelona. Three podiums the whole year.
It all came in a bunch. And to Nick's point, whether that is a reflection of his ability to bring a team together or to lead, and maybe he's not a leader. And he certainly is he certainly wouldn't be a particularly demonstrative character. He's pretty laid back, quiet, likes to his bike to do, and his performances on the track to do the talking. But maybe that's not what they need.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell, but...
Well, he had a wrist injury, but he said he had too much of an up and down season. There was some peaks, but there were some troughs. Too spiky, I think, is what he said in the interview, which I think was a great thing to say. But neither Brad nor Miguel have been in the top 10 or were in the top 10 early in the test. They need more corner speed, in grip in the middle of the corner. That's what they're talking about. So there's still work to do. And in fact, they were outshone by the rookies in the testing. So there's clearly still work to do there. And I'm not sure if those two are the two to develop bikes. And that was my point that I was trying to sort of make rather badly earlier on. And then again, as Nick said, the Tech 3 KTM team, we might as well do them now, Raul Fernandez and Remy Gardner. The youngsters seem to have just got on the bike and ridden it. And sort of, if there are problems, the kind of decks riding around them. And everybody rates Remy Gardner. We saw what he did last season. Raul Fernandez, there's a lot of people in his corner as well. I wouldn't say they've got a free season where, you know, everything is possible for them. But, you know, people are rather... Certainly before testing, people weren't looking in their direction so much for KTM. They were looking at the Red Bull team. And yet they've come out pretty shiny after it.
Well, if you're any one of the KTM riders, my biggest fear would be a 17-year-old in Moto2, to be perfectly honest. And I'm dead serious, because if he wins the championship, they're not Pedro Costa's not staying in Moto2 if he wins the Moto2 championship. He'll be an 18-year-old getting ready for a season of MotoGP, and one of those four riders will have to go. And they have, KTM have, and Tech 3 particularly, obviously have showed how mercenary and how cruel they can be by ditching Iker Lekuona as things were really beginning to turn for him, and he was beginning to settle in as a 21-year-old. So it means that particularly, I'd say, Pharrell Fernandez and Remy Gardner, that the pressure on them to hit the ground running, there will be a bit of pressure. I don't think they've got as much kind of latitude, as they could have. Remy has recovering from a broken wrist, so he's been aching and feeling it a little bit in testing. I think, and ultimately, if I was to be brutally honest, I feel Raul Fernandez threw away the title last year. I think he should have won it. I think he's faster. I think he's a better rider than Remy. I think there's not much in it, but I think Raul Fernandez will prevail over those two. And I think Remy Gardner has an awful lot on his plate. And I think he, of all of the four riders, and particularly the two riders with Tech 3, I think he's going to have the biggest, he'll have, funnily enough, the two Aussies, weirdly, I think are going to have the biggest microscopes on them.
Right, yeah. Quick word from you, Nick, about the two rookies, Raul Fernandez and Remy Gardner.
This is going to be by far the most interesting internecine battle. It's the one which is really, really interesting to see. And I agree with Dex. It's kind of a winner takes all, as in the winner stays in the team. Obviously politics and money come into play as well. But they came into this, sort of balance. As Dex says, there was a slight more feeling that Fernandez was quicker, but yeah, we've always said, it's very, very different. A MotoGP bike is a different animal, and Remy, if he's fit, it's going to be a really, really interesting battle and see who can get the upper hand, because it's not, it doesn't seem like they've got that 1 year to learn and then get on with it. It's the sort of KTM Damocles is hanging over all of them. if the youngsters do well in Moto2.
Damascene sword of Acosta. Repsol Honda team, Paul Espargaró and Marc Márquez. Marc Márquez, still not the old Marc Márquez. He probably never will be. We talked about that at length for the last couple of seasons, it seems. Paul Espargaró, Nick, you can go first on this. On a Honda that is not as it was when Marc was last anywhere near fitness.
No, and I would think, as far as Honda is concerned, just as well, really, because it means they got a chance to get more than one bike up on a regular basis. Paul Espargaró, he looked very good in testing. It does seem this new design of bike is more suited to him and also to the other team as well. So, yeah, the thing is, this is the point. You look around, and all the riders are effectively laser focused on what Márquez can do in his current state. We are never going to see the Márquez of 19 again. No. That's not going to happen.
No.
You cannot, whoever you are, you can't cheat recurring injuries and you can't cheat time. And he is now 27, 28, which outside of Rossi is getting on a bit for a MotoGP rider. He's had 2 years off of not much work, but he's been injuring himself left, right, and centre. His style of riding, which is go as fast as you can until you fall off and then rein it back one, is beginning to catch up on him. But the fact about this is, he is still the only, as of today, he is the only rider from that echelon of greats that we had still able to produce that ability. The rest of his riders, even the current ones, are just very good. They're not Rossi in his prime. They're not Márquez in his prime. They're not Stoner in his prime. They're not any of those. He didn't win a champion. They're not even Danny Pedrosa in their prime, I don't think.
Okay.
That's a really interesting point, because I make the difference. I would highlight one or two that have that. And you might be right. Right now they're not, but I think there's one or two riders in that.
No, I'm not saying people can't grow into it. But I'm just saying you sit down and you go, right, who would you, if you put those riders in their prime, against any of the riders here, you'd think, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 would be the world of aliens.
So here's the three issues I think Marc Márquez has got to tackle this year. Number one, he's still not 100% Marc Márquez fit, and it is affecting his riding style, as we know from what's happened with his shoulder and the balance of performance with the mallet that Dex was talking about earlier on. Number two, he's riding a bike that isn't purely built, designed, and in concept just for Marc Márquez. And number three, and I think this is possibly more difficult to measure, but I think it's the most important in terms of the rest of the grid, is the rest of the grid know that they can beat Marc Márquez now. They're not just Dex running for second position anymore, because they know that he's fallible, that he's human, and that they've got, that he's beatable, basically, because we've seen that.
And they know that they can race him. And funny enough, it comes back to the start of 2020, when he had the incident after he fell off and he got back on. And if you remember, during that race, he passed Jack Miller, and Jack Miller went back by him. And Jack Miller said afterwards, and they caught it on a hot mic, and he said, "I just wanted to mess with him to see how he'd react." And he will put himself in positions potentially against a fleet of Ducatis that you have to race a specific way, and he will put himself in a position where he probably has to metaphorically and physically lean on his shoulder to perform. And that's the big question mark. And I totally agree with you. I think the guys at the front of the field, the ruthless guys at the front of the field, will know that, and we'll take that into account as they race him. And that's fascinating how that plays out.
He's just turned 29, I reckon.
God, he's not even 30.
No, he's not. He's 30. He's 30 next year, in February.
The other thing I'd say about the racing situation, if you look at the races he won last year, mm-hmm. Sachsenring, it's a circuit designed for him. But interestingly, it only really came about because it's a very hard track to pass. He was in the lead when it started to rain.
And
Aleix Espargaró had a brain fart lost about 4 seconds for everybody on this one damp lap. And then at that point, what happens is the people following think, well, Márquez isn't in the championship. He's missed several races already. We haven't got to bother. Yeah. And that definitely happened at the Circuit of the Americas. You can see the Quartararo went, no, it's just fine. I'll get third. I'll have the points. I'm not interested in chasing him. Now, I'm not saying he wouldn't have won those races anyway, but there was a very different mental attitude by other riders about him, because he wasn't in the championship. He'd missed a couple of rounds. He started slowly. He'd fallen off in Silverstone and other places. So he was just there, you know, picking up podiums for his Wikipedia page, effectively. But this year, if he is in the championship, then they're going to look at him in a very different way. And as you quite rightly, John, starting from a position where they know he has weaknesses, they know they can beat him.
And he can't keep falling off, because the other thing that's pushed him back was he had a recurrence of the diplopia, which is double vision, that he got in 2011. And he can't keep doing that. And he's got to be protected from himself. We've had this conversation on Midweek Motorsport. Let's move on to team... Dex, have a quick word about Paul before we move on to Suzuki.
He couldn't be happier. I think he has every chance of breaking his duck this year. I think that bike certainly is for... It's a bike for everybody, but it's certainly a bike for him. He's delighted with the way the rear handles. He was fastest leaving Indonesia. He is a little worried, I think, that there's a wider performance window, which is and there's a little bit more flexibility with the bike. Although he might still need some cooler temperatures to be really quick. So look at the races where we have lower track temperatures, I think a little bit east. I think there's a little doubt as to whether they can operate as optimum once track temperatures get very hot. But he's almost certainly going to win a race this year, at least, if not multiple.
A few, yeah.
Yeah.
We've mentioned there are only two Suzukis. They're both obviously in the X-Star team. For Team Suzuki, the works bikes, the blue and white machines, the beautiful blue and white machines, whatever Nick thinks. Joan Mir and Alex Rins. Right, okay, so what hasn't changed, Nick, in everything else in the committee run team and the change of leadership, what hasn't changed is the two riders. And they sort of just got on with it last year. And I was going to say that I don't think what was going on at the team benefited either of them coming off the World Championship year. And I just wonder what it did to their head last year.
Well, you know, Alex Rins was a constant disappointment, qualified well, was normally running third or fourth, and then he'd fall off.
He fell off again and again and again.
Joan Mir, I'm going to say it because you guys are too polite, is probably one of the least deserving world champions of all time in MotoGP. Isn't fit to do at the boots of most of the other MotoGP champions, but has now picked up the arrogance where he thinks he deserves to be a champion. He is a journeyman who got lucky during a COVID season and only managed to win one race. And his consistency when others, when Marquez obviously injured himself, Quartararo had a mental breakdown, everyone else couldn't string together the season. In some ways, you have to go, well done, Joan, but luckily, basically, he completely lucked into it. Morbidelli was way quicker, Oliveira was quicker in that year. And now he's sitting there going, I am a world champion, I need this. No, Joan, you are a number two rider, and what Suzuki needs is a number one. That's what I think.
Well, you know what? I think this mad season that we're going to have will have a lot of similarities to 2020. And you may laugh. I think he can win the championship again doing exactly the same thing.
Hang on.
Well, Dex, let's not forget, in his championship winning season, didn't he... I don't think he scored any points in two of the first three races because they had bike problems.
Yeah.
And then after the Czech Grand Prix, he just started notching up podiums. I'll come to you a second, Nick. Don't worry, I will. If other people, because it is so going to be so hard at the front, if other people are knocking lumps out of each other, I think that somebody like Joan Mir might still have a chance. Nick, what are you going to say?
100%.
He won't be in the top five.
He won't be in the top five of the championship. Okay, Dex, in the championship.
He will be in the top five in the championship.
No,
oh,
won't.
Excellent. This is more like it. But no, he won't. Oh, no, I agree with Dex. Oh, no, I agree with Nick. But I honestly think, Dex, that because it is such a wide open world championship, as we've talked about, just staying out of trouble and getting to the end of races in, you know, getting a podium, top four, top five, top six, keep doing that and keep consistently scoring while other people are elbowing other people off the track and people are falling down because they're trying too hard. He could be in the same position as he was two seasons ago.
Yeah, but I will say this, and it's something we talked about before we came on air. The Suzuki's just unwillingness to radically change things on the bike just is massively frustrating as a fan, because obviously it's a wonderful bike, beautifully balanced. It simply doesn't have enough horsepower, and as we've discussed a billion times already on this show today, that's going to be so important when it comes to just being able to put yourself in a position early in a race, which means you have to qualify well, which means you've got to practice in time attack in free practice too. You've got to be fast and qualifying, and the whole weekend leading up to the start of the race is now effectively about being fast over a single lap. You just have to be able to do that, and I just don't see them having that ability. Mir's going to have to rely on his savvy and his racecraft and his tire management, and I think he can do that. But I firmly believe he'll be top five. But they don't do themselves any favors with the way they choose to make incremental gains or with that bike.
If Alex Rins can stay on Dex, then you know he could be a title contender. Even with notwithstanding what you've said about the issues with the Suzuki?
Well, Rins is faster than Mir. I think Nick would agree with that. I think Rins is faster than Mir. And last year, you may remember, I felt like he had, in our preview, I felt he had a chance to win the title. But then the Peter principle kicked in, and he definitely reached the level of his own incompetence. He could not stay on the bike.
It became a mental thing, didn't it? You could almost time it. He's making the jump across to the leading group. He's on the back of the leading group. He's moved up. Oh, he's up in the third. Oh, he's off.
Yeah. I think it was Portimao. I might have got it wrong. It was one of the early races where He responded to Quartararo when Quartararo was leading. And he responded, and suddenly the gap went from, say, it was 3/4 a second to 1/2 a second, and it was down to 3/10. And in your head, you're going, yeah, he doesn't know when to stop, and he's coming off this. And he did, and he came off, because he... And weirdly, if he just settled and done that for the whole season, he might have won the World Championship.
But is he Marquez but less talented then? Because Marquez never knows when to stop either, and Marquez has been ace at saving crashes that nobody else could, and Alex Rins can't save them, Nick. So he actually does fall off.
But we're all Marquez without the talent. It's just to the varying degrees of how little talent we have.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I'm like Mark Marquez. If you take away 99.974% of his talent,
I'm like Mark Marquez without talent, and so is my wife.
I'm like Mark Marquez if you take away 103% of the talent.
You're minus 3% talent. That's very good. All right, let's move on to the Natalie title, our final team, before some predictions from my esteemed guest, the With You Yamaha RNF MotoGP team. TM.
Or is that the best they could do, Yamaha team?
Oh, this really is contractual obligation. I feel bad.
Team contractual obligation would have been better. Andrea Dovizioso and Darren Binder.
Because there's 24 bikes and there'll be 23rd and 24th most of the time.
Oh, is that what Dovi, we think?
Dovi just has basically come out and already said, like... After testing was finished, I need to get the quote exactly right, but he basically said, "Oh, you know, it's really like I have to completely change my riding style, and it's just what he's effectively saying was, this is I can't ride this bike; it's really slow on the corners, and it has no grip coming out.
Was he saying I'm too old for this?
Yeah, basically.
Thanks for the cash.
He said he wasn't comfortable with the speed he needs to carry through the corners, which basically means this bike's not fast enough. I'm having to absolutely just rag this thing, and it's dangerous.
And a month ago, Dex, we're here to fight for the title, said Dovizioso. Team principal Raslan Razali saying Dovizioso can fight for the championship. Then he actually rides the bike with other people around him and sees the competition and goes, I need to do an awful lot to adapt to this different style of riding.
That's the sort of announcement you'd expect. They've just signed Rich Energy as a sponsor.
Don't. So here's the question then. Is that the bike and what we were talking about, you know, earlier on about it being a Quartararo focused machine, or is that the fact that Andrea is kind of phoning it in a bit now, Dex? Or is it a bit both?
I'm not sure if that's fair or unfair, but I think you'll soon realize if he doesn't phone it in for the first couple of races, after that, I think he will. I think literally there'll be a cell phone sitting on the bike on the grid, and he'll be at home making bike noises. No, he's so used to a Ducati, obviously, and that quote kind of basically subtext.
He was the only challenger for Mark Marquez in 17 and 18, and in 19 he was runner up three times in a row, wasn't he? In 17, 18, 19.
And that quote basically, the subtext of that quote is, I can't just, you know, roll it through the corner and then gas it coming out the other side because I'm not on the Ducati anymore. And I think they're not as funded as they were. Well, they're significantly less well funded than they were. And hence the reason they take Darren Binder, because he's basically, to quote Spinal Tap, because we don't have to pay insurance and he's already on the payroll. And I'm expecting absolutely nothing from this team.
I think you have too high expectations.
and you could still be disappointed. Okay.
I'm expecting minus 3% from this team.
Minus 3%. Okay. That's good. I expected absolutely nothing from them, and they didn't disappoint. Right. Excellent. all right. Let's have a couple of predictions then. Yeah. I think we've decided that just by sheer weight of numbers, Ducati have got an advantage, and particularly at Qatar for the first race, Nick. So are we picking a Ducati rider for the first race victory of the season?
First race, Frankie McIntyre.
Right. Dex, first race victory of the season?
Martin.
Is it? Ooh.
No.
Okay, Martin for Primark. Okay. And for the title, then, if it's going to be, as you two say, a lot closer and a fought out between more riders, Dex thinks that there's going to be some new winners this year, possibly some of the rookies making us sit up and take notice. Who's going to be there at the end, Dex? If you had to pick two, let's say two riders who were going into the final couple of races, battling it out, who do you think it'll be?
It's going to be Bagnaia and Marc Marquez.
Ooh. Nick, couple of rounds to go.
This doesn't make very good programming, but I completely agree.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In that case, I disagree.
I think Paul Espargaro's going to win his first race. There we are. I'll stick one out there.
I disagree with myself.
I will say, just as I once tweeted jokingly that Mazda were very confident of winning the Manufacturers' Championship in the MX-5 Cup, I absolutely believe that the one prediction that we can make with total unanimity is that the Manufacturers' Championship is going to Ducati.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Just before we go, Dex, a quick word from you about Moto2. We've talked a lot about Moto2, and we've talked about how much talent has moved on out of Moto2 from the sharp end of the field, leaving this young sensation of Pedro Acosta, who won from the front of the grid, won from the middle of the grid, won from the back of the grid, and won from the pit lane last year. At one stage, I think it was at Aragon, he actually started at Manicor and still won the race.
That's right, yes.
It was extraordinary.
He started in a glass box in chains.
Yes, at the bottom of a lake. Yeah. With no fuel. He's got to be. I'm interested to see how he gets on with the big bike, the bigger bike. Not everybody makes that. Moto2 is a particular riding style. Doesn't always translate to MotoGP either. But he's got to be a favourite for the championship, hasn't he? With so many having moved on.
I think it might take three or four races or five or six races for him to just fully settle. But yeah. Weirdly, I could see the season going this way. I could see Sam Lowe's really winning early and then just not being able to hold off a maturing Pedro Acosta. And the wild card who could get in the way some weeks, I think, will be Aaron Canet. Aaron Canet, who may have to ride two bikes because he needs to find more places for tattoos. So,
11 rookies. To tell you how much there's been a changing of the guard, Moto2 has 11 rookies. Obviously, the Moto3 world champion, Moto America champion, and many, many more. You would think it would be somebody who's done a couple of seasons, but I don't think that's necessarily the thing this year in Moto2.
I will say, Beaubier, I think, could make this year. I'd love to
he's your Moto America champion. Yeah, that would be really good for Moto America.
Yeah,
as well.
Yes, it would. Yeah, that's a great point.
Moto3, Dex, a quick word.
It's completely wide open. I have no clue. Honestly, no idea. I would say if he matures, if he can just keep his head together, I think Dennis Onchu might win it. I'm really rebound after the disaster of last year and the fact that he had the ban for the accident at Coda. But it's hard to say. It literally, like every race, naturally I want John McPhee to win it before he ages out and has to be killed, obviously. So I would love for John McPhee to win it on the...
Sorry, so does that happen in kind of a Logan's Run thing where they kind of circle around and go, renew, yeah, go to BSB, exactly. That sort of thing.
Moto2.
We discussed this before. Yeah. So he has one more year and I'd love to see him.
He's got Sasaki as his teammate this year, and he's moved to a new team. He often complained about his bike not having straight line speed, but obviously the Scotsman John McPhee would like to see him do well. Anna Carrasco back on Moto3 grid.
Yeah, she's really struggled in testing. She's back. I love her. I love her attitude. I love the fact that she won the Supersport 300 world title. The issue being that Supersport 300 is not Moto3. It's fabulous and it's great to watch, and it's really competitive for what it is, but it isn't Moto 3, and mate, it's a big jump between the two, and she's struggled and she's been off the pace in testing. I would love her to find her feet and you know, trouble the scorers, but I'm not sure that's going to be possible this year. We'll see.
Fastest in the pre-season testing, certainly at the end of pre-season testing, it was the Leopard, wasn't it? It was Foggia who was quickest. I think he's got to be looked up quite seriously as well. If he can get his consistency, he's got to have the consistency.
Absolutely. But honestly, I simply, you can win that championship by being consistent, like Arenas did, who's not troubling the scorers in Moto 2, or you can win it like Juan Mir did, which was to do that thing where he toys with the field and then with three laps to go says bye-bye, or you can be Brad Binder. But there's lots of ways to win it, but I simply don't know who is really the standout. There may not be one in Moto 3.
I really like the look of Moto 3, and Moto 2 is the one I'm going to watch last, because it's the one that, for some reason, and I can't really put my finger on it, it just doesn't excite me as much as Moto 3 and MotoGP do, for very different reasons. It's very different racing, but there's just something a bit nondescript, I've said this before and it sounds awful, but I think you guys know what I mean. It almost looks like a souped up track day, Moto 2. I think that'll change this year because of all those rookies in it. I've got high hopes of Moto 2. Guys, thanks very much indeed. We'll continue to talk about Moto GP, Moto 2 and Moto 3 throughout the season on Midweek Motorsport. Enjoy the season. Cheer for whoever you want. But remember, if it's not who Dex and Nick said, then you're absolutely wrong. Thank you to Declan and to Nick and to Tim Greer, our executive producer. That was our look at the MotoGP 2022 season.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.